I think that we hope, much like in doing the work in total, that our reward for being vulnerable is that we'll find the love of our life, and that everybody will treat us kindly, and that we'll get exactly what we deserve. And that is not the reason why you're vulnerable, mostly because it's not going to happen. Our reward for being vulnerable is that we will have been honest. You profess your love for somebody because it's true and because your desire deserves to be heard, not because that person is going to say it in return. You tell somebody what you're comfortable and not comfortable with simply because then they'll know how to treat you, even if they don't do that, and you'll become all that more clear about whether or not you want to be there. Then you can make a choice, not because you can guarantee that somebody will do that for you. Being vulnerable is telling the truth, and telling the truth is like dropping a pin in the universe. Goodness will find you, and in the meantime, you're honest.
I always been that, always been that, always been that. I always been that, always been that, always been that. I always been that, I always been that bitch. I always been that, always been that, been that bitch. I always been that, always been that bitch. I always been that, I always been that bitch. Yo! I always gotta back away from the mic, ho, when I yell at you motherfuckers. Welcome to the Black Sublime Podcast. This is your host, A. White. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited to entertain y'all, to teach, to share, to love, to do all of that good stuff. And it's an honor that you choose to listen to me every week or every time I decide to yell on the microphone, which, you know, is not as often as it should be. It should be more often. I should be more present. I've had an interesting couple of weeks, child. An interesting couple of weeks. So we'll do a little bit of story time. And then I'm trying something a little different. I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing. But, you know, the idea was to kind of make little small points, like bullet points of my thoughts. Not sure if that's gonna ever work. I talk too much. I'm all over the place. Don't plan well enough for that. It's not that I just too much improvisation. But I do think I can do a better job at telling a story. So I want to kind of borrow from narrative, borrow from storytelling, try to do a beginning, middle, end type shit and make some points or not make points or, you know, share what have you. But I do want to start just with talking shit because the other day. All right, so I sent probably one of the wildest texts I've ever sent in my life to somebody. Like, I mean, when I say it was one of the most, I'm not even going to really do too much about what I said via text, but this gentleman, right, this gentleman, she decided, you know, we used to fool around. I've outgrown it, well, at least I outgrew it, and I felt that, you know, I mean, honestly, I stopped feeling good about it. I stopped feeling good about it. So once I stopped feeling good about it, I stopped doing it. And I was really polite about, you know, not wanting to do this anymore. I was really polite about it. None of it resonated. None of it clicked. And what happened was this person was like, well, you know, I know you like it too. I know you, you know. So I had to respond crazily. Like, for me, it was crazy because I never treat partners like this. I personally like to treat my partner. I feel like if we're going to do this, I should treat you with utmost respect, even if, like, we're not going to be like long term partners. Right. Just that, you know, if we've done something, I should treat you well. And I basically said some shit. I was like, how I feel about this situation. I was like, it's a deep yuck. Like, it's gross to me, right? Like, I'm over it. Like, I'm over it. I'm done. And I was trying to not, like, do that. I was trying to avoid that. Because a deep yuck would make me feel crazy. If someone described their feelings toward me as a deep yuck, I think it would be crazy, right? So I was like, all right. Hopefully, old boy gets the picture. On Saturday, he sends me this I miss you thing. And I'm like, something is wrong. So now, you know, if y'all see somebody, if you hear about some shit happening with me, you know it's because you know what it is. You know what it is. You know, I mean, if I'll tell the people that are in my life, like, who it is. Like, because this person is probably crazy, right? Like, if somebody says this to you, says that it's a deep yuck, like you give them a deep yuck, like I feel like it's a dub, like it's chopped, like it's over. Why do you think an I missed you is gonna fix that? It's not, right? Like it's not. So, you know, I've been dealing with some foolery. And then with the studio that I've been using, so I am sorry for not being, not doing an episode or a few episodes. The studio that I've been using has had some scheduling conflict, so I haven't been able to get the time slot that I've needed to do my work. But I'm back, and you know there are going to be some adjustments to the schedule over the next couple of weeks, so bear with me. And beyond that, I've been having some personal issues with my family. You know, my grandmother wasn't doing well, and that really sat me down and had me thinking and reflecting and emoting, and I just needed to do that. So that's what I've been doing for the past couple of weeks. There's a lot that I want to say today, and my goal, as I mentioned, is not to do too much off-the-cuff shit. I mean, it's going to be off-the-cuff no matter what, but to try to provide some structure. The theme of today, or what has been on my heart, is really the tradition of silence. The tradition of silence, the weight of silence, how silence causes us to suffer, how we suffer in silence. I wanted to address this in part to pay respect to my grandmother. When I reflected on her life, so before I go into that, the way I'm kind of trying to think about this topic is to talk about the context, the beginning of my interaction, my understanding, you know, what I've inherited, what I was taught, kind of like that beginning, and then the development of that, my transformation in that environment, and then moving that to where I'm now, or what I'm trying to do as a result of that, all that stuff. So kind of like beginning, middle, end, kind of. So there's this, my grandmother is a survivor of tremendous proportion. My grandparents, I only knew three of my grandparents. I didn't know the fourth because niggas ain't shit. But I should, okay, my bad. Now, but I feel like, you know, I knew the three. Well, actually, the niggas ain't shit thing is hilarious. I will tell this story another time, but that's funny. That's funny. So I knew three. And all of them were tremendous. I mean, all of them. I come from amazing people that have survived the most treacherous. The odds were stacked against them every step of the way. And I have, and it's beautiful to know that you always been a real bitch. You know, it's good to know that. It really is. So I was raised, and with my grandmother in particular, she it was and is an amazing confidant for me. You know, when I was a kid, my grandfather allowed me to speak, which is shout out to him, honestly. He provided me with a revolutionary pass to speak my mind. And that empowered me to advocate for others, to advocate for truth, to pursue truth in a way that, you know, as a Black man in the South, that was not the way. You know, that you could not just say, well, you could not do that. Like, everything was perceived as disrespect. Everything was perceived as backtalking. That is not the history of our people. And that from that, like, no. And there was criticism for it. I remember experiencing a lot of jealousy from other people in my family because I was allowed to speak. My grandmother, on the other hand, her craft was silence. Her craft was keeping secrets, was listening and storing, you know, retaining, but not sharing. Her craft, she did react to what was said to her, but her craft was acceptance. Her craft was not advocacy. So as a confidant, you know, I told her, I mean, the shit that I told my grandmother, you know, to paint a better picture, my grandmother's Jehovah's Witness, also from the South. She's from a town that's not mapped anymore. You know, Evansville, we always think about, like, when we refer to where she was from, we refer to the largest town that it was there. But when you talk to them, the town where they were actually from, you had to walk from there to the town. So it was not there, and it doesn't exist anymore. You know, this is country, this is Black, this is religious in a conservative sense. And my ass was sitting there. I'm from Brooklyn, right? So I'm a 90s baby with, like, you know, just a whole bunch of wild shit going on, saying whatever the fuck I wanted to say. You know, my grandma said I can speak my mind, so I did. And I just was kind of just going, whatever. Like, it was kind of crazy. I remember when I went to Spain. So my junior year of high school, I went to Spain as part of an abroad program, and my family didn't have any money, right? So I went, the school paid for my ticket. I think my scholarship paid for the ticket, or the financial aid paid for the ticket. And it was, you stayed with a family, so that was fine. But you didn't have any money. So I told my grandma, I was like, yo, grandma, I'm going to start stripping. I'm a strip. I mean, I'm 16, so this is probably against all the laws, but I'm a strip. And she was just like, what? I didn't strip. Okay, just spoiler. I think my mom figured out how to get money, or somebody did. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to hit the club. Now, you telling your mother, your grandmother, or this religious person that you are going to strip for money is crazy, right? Like, it is something that you cannot do, right? Like, if anybody who's familiar with, like, Black grandmothers from the South, like, this is not a thing you could do or say. And my sexuality, you know, as soon as I never felt closeted. You know, as soon as I was okay with my sexuality, I lived it. You know, it wasn't like, I don't know how to explain this in a way without derailing us, but maybe we'll get into that one day. But my issues with my sexuality were not related to my family. I did experience negative things in my family, but I did not give a fuck about them really enough to let it really affect my life. But yeah, all to say is my grandmother, and I had witnessed so many things, so much violence, so many things that I had no place to put them, and I gave them to her. We're talking about, I mean, again, not to derail us, but violence that would scar anybody. And I had nobody to talk to. I talked to my grandmother. And the thing about it is she always, I mean, the warmth, the acceptance, it wasn't this type of, it wasn't stereotypical, but I would sit on the floor in front of her for hours. Like, I would get out of school, I'd come home, and I would sit there for like 4 hours every day just talking to my grandmother for years, right? It's not like, it was like, this is what I did while people were in the street. I was talking to Gramps, right? The thing about silence, though, and about being a confidant, and about loyalty as defined in that way, there are two things to note, and they're really the same thought, is that it's gendered, and that silence on behalf or for the benefit of one person is for the betrayal of another, right? Silence for the benefit of one person betrays another person. So while I was experiencing this amazing confidence from my grandmother and this silence, these secrets that are kept from me, other people were experiencing betrayal, a lack of advocacy, someone who didn't shake shit up for them when they should have, right? An alliance to something that seems like the status quo, when it's really her strategy of surviving, and it worked for me. Like, I have nothing, I can't even think of a negative memory. You know, I have things that are not great, but I, you know, whereas other people don't have that. So to watch something that I laud her for also be something that other people would have trouble or beef with her for is something that, it's a deeper, nuanced understanding of a person's life. And what I think about my upbringing is on the same page, my grandmother did not like liars. I mean, being honest was like the most important thing. Like, if I told a lie, I was writing a Bible verse down like hundreds of times, right? Like, whatever the Bible verse was, like, the devil's the father of liars or whatever, I was writing that verse. Like, if I told a lie, it was like 200 times, 300 times. Like, I would just be there writing, right? Like, that is what, like, you were not to lie. But to think about, obviously, lies of omission and stuff like that, how much I had to mind my tongue as a kid in the name of truth, but be beholden to this code of silence, it seems so contradictory when you think about the fullness that truth is and what my spirit does with truth, right? So as I grew up, so this goes into transformation, right? This goes into how I, you know, I realized I've embodied both principles. I've embodied my grandfather's speak the truth, pursue the truth, advocate for others. But I also adopted silence, and particularly in reference to my personal life. I don't speak really about me, and I guard my secrets similarly to how my grandmother guarded hers. You know, in the first part of this conversation, I talked about how she kept my secrets. And one thing I meant to say, but I got distracted, was that I feel in some ways that secret keeping, I know she kept women's secrets, but I feel like she kept more of men's secrets than women's secrets. And it's not the case that women have fewer secrets. I think, you know, part of her understanding of gender is
that women, particularly Black women, should keep secrets. You know, should, you know, that's part of running a family. I think she has this belief somewhere. And insofar as my social function in my family, in relation to my grandmother, my social function was male in most ways. She did teach me a lot about things that we would not be considered masculine. But I think in her core, she understands my social function to be masculine. With the exception of like cooking and baking and sewing and shit, because she did teach me how to do some of those things. When, particularly as a kid, and I think some of that was her trying to save me, but whatever. As I grew up and matured and had to navigate my own survival and deal with the social function I played in the world, the feminine social function I played in the world, I found myself being the confidant of men as well. You know, obviously I had a lot of female friends, but the way I sort of navigated protecting, like my own protection or my own safety, the way I navigated the world when I was not willing to be aggressive or violent myself, which, you know, there were, I also gave it up. So, you know, whatever. But like, you know, I did choose these relationships that that reproduced what my grandmother did. And that set me at odds with against myself, set me at odds with myself because I had this pursuit of truth, advocacy, justice thing. And then I had this, like, you be silent and keep secrets and thing from her. And I was in semi-permanent conflict and still content with that, with not necessarily, I still contend with the quiet, you know, the quiet and the silence as a threat to my actualization. And this is not to blame her at all. Well, it's not to blame her solely. It is the case that I reproduced the pattern as kids do. But there was a concerted effort exacted by almost everyone in my life, every human being. So the systems in which I was embedded at family, school, etc., to quiet me down. You know, my uncles would joke about me being too loud. You know, don't say this, say that. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. You know, the tone policing, from all of these things to get me to do and say less with less intensity is something that has happened as I matured. This is not a woe is me thing. I think that's being Black. That is being Black. It happens to everybody who is Black but is trying to contend with whiteness in a way that can be materially beneficial. So it's not just, you know, unless you're entertaining them, you need to shrink and, you know, these things. And then you bring gender back into it, where my queerness put me in both social functions, right? Like me as somebody who presented as queer has me in this masculine social function as a Black person, semi-masculine, right? Black masculine, which is not to say white masculine. You know, this Black masculine social function that has me be a threat, be a danger to that. So I have to shrink anyway in response to that. I cannot be intense. I cannot flex power. I cannot flex strength, right? I need to be strategic about the strength and really muted about the strength I display. And then there is the feminine social function, which is like, don't say too much. You know, like the way black women are silenced, not believed, right? Like this conspiracy against black women speaking truth, but also the stereotype that they speak truth, right? Like from our own people, you know, our the way we stereotype each other. It's just like it was complicated and messy and remains so for a lot of people. So as I matured, I should say matured again, so or continue to mature is probably a better way of saying that. As I navigate adulthood, it's my job to break tradition. It's my job to break the pattern, to break the cycle, to love generously, to understand loyalty without silence. I was thinking about what Monique was saying on Club Shay Shay, how she said that if you do something and they if you do some fucked up shit and then you ask her to keep a secret, she's gonna ask you if you hurt somebody, if you're doing wrong. Because for her, that is more important. That if you are doing something wrong, if you are causing other people harm, that requires her to act. She cannot be silent just for the sake of keeping your secret. That to me, I mean, obviously there's some shit. I'm not lifting her up as an idol or anything because we heard about her shit with her son or whatever. Not my business, but that is a conflict. You know, my whole life, I've just been like, you can tell me whatever. I got you. And I still kind of feel like if you know you're fucking up, then I don't really need to, you know, you can say it because we can talk about how you fucking up and we can work on you fucking up. But, you know, I'm not going to act like you're not fucking up. That's crazy, right? I do think that I'm still at this point where I am acknowledging my own needs and I'm acknowledging the world I want to create, but I'm seeing the effects. Like, you know, relatively recently, I built peace on silence professionally. You know, there's a professional environment that I constructed on the back of my own silence, right? And then now that I'm over it, because that's the issue with me. The issue is because this is not my natural orientation, because there is conflict, you know, I'll choose conflict between my orientations or whatever. There, I will be silent until I'm not. And then when I'm not, it get real messy real quick. So I'm working on that. But I say all of this because I think a lot of people that I have seen in my life or interact with in my life choose silence at their own detriment. I wonder how much of my grandmother's suffering is related to the secrets that she has kept, both others and her own. I wonder, and I believe a lot. The things that people have told her and the things that she has kept silent about are world-shattering, physiologically draining things. There is no way she has peace in her body. You know, after the summation of all of those things. And I just, you know, and at, she's also not as, you know, the thing about when somebody is struggling with like mental illness or like degeneration, you know, something like dementia or, you know, nightmares or panic and stuff like that. You see the cracks of the facade, you know, the mask and the structure. You see the fringes, the unraveling, the seams, things that, you know, were held together by something, by thin beliefs. You start to see it, you know, and it's like when somebody starts recounting trauma from 60 years ago, 70 years ago, then you start to see, well, the beliefs and the threads, the things that held you together were not, were thin, because you were just stitching away. You were using the thread of the need to survive to keep you together, but there was no resolution there. There was no true peace there. You were just getting by. And when you think about the silence that's kept, and a lot of that being just stitching, just weak threads to keep something like a family together, to keep something like, you know, a bond between siblings, a bond between grandchildren together, to keep your house from falling apart, you use silence to stitch it together, but silence is not enough. Now when it's the solitude of aging, the solitude of the potential end of your life, these things, the silence did not help you. And it's spilling out. And that, to me, has been one of the hardest things about this, is this idea that someone's entire life, you know, can be described in this way. You know, someone who I love with I love this person. It that feels tragic. You know, it's not simply the decline in health that's sad. You know, I mean, it's sad, obviously. But the tragic part is the sacrifice, is the fact that the strategy used did not work. It didn't work. And so I say this to people because I want us to learn from it and to not repeat this pattern. And it's hard for me to say. It's obviously my life and someone that I love dearly and stuff that I'm struggling with. But it's something that I feel strongly about. And I encourage us, particularly, you know, Black people, queer people, marginalized people, to not do this. It doesn't work. I'm going to end this podcast with two things I want to share. Well, maybe three, but I'm going to try to do it quickly. The first thing is I want to honor and respect the woman whose clip I used at the beginning of this episode. Her handle is Kendramaris. And I think what she said about being honest, being vulnerable because it is right, because you will have been honest. Because I think she talked about goodness will find you in the meantime, people have been honest. I think that's true. And trying to get to a point in your morality and your maturity where that honesty is a good in of itself. It's an end in of itself. You know, it's something, it's an expression of spirit, it's a level of human functioning that is worth the work. You know, I think about, and I say this aspirationally because a lot of times I don't say things because it doesn't feel worth it. A lot of times I don't express thoughts or feelings because it doesn't feel worth it. But there is a form of human functioning where, particularly in intimate settings, where sharing is its own good, is its own end. You're doing it because it's right. The second thing is a poem I want to share. I wrote this poem maybe 3 to 4 years ago. And where she at? And it's ironically called Keeping Secrets. It's a short poem, but I wanted to share it because it ironically speaks to this theme. Keeping Secrets by me. No, let me stop. My silence is my gift. I suffer in it, I suffer for it, but it keeps others alive. My silence is the elixir, the first meal of all who eat, the breast milk that sustains the little black mouths that will eventually spit in my face and call me faggot, that will deny me life in the end, but claim they always loved me. They will eat from the tree that fruits atop my dead body. The trees won't say what I should have and will give generously, whispering our truth underneath their breath. My coffin is made from my sister, another person whose silence fed a village, another tree nourished from the rot of a casted tongue. I have her with me. And the last thing I'll share is the background vocals from a song. I might sing along with it because I do feel like it needs that. These are background vocals. I might sing the lead. I don't know. We'll see how I feel, ho. But it's My Everything. This is the first song that I wrote that I believed in. This arrangement, I don't necessarily love. I love the background vocals. I love performing this song live. But My Everything is the first song that I was like, oh, I believe in this. I believe in me as a songwriter. I believe in me as a vocal arranger, vocal producer. I love this. I love the way the harmony. I just believed in this record. Or I believed in this song, and I still do. I want to share it because I feel like I need it for me. And if I choose to sing along, you know, it's just because I want the harmony to be right, which is, I mean, you know, it's not going to be a great, you know, whatever, and sing along. But yeah, I want to share that song, and I'm going to leave us with this. I think I'm going to just do it now.
Foolishly, chase love regrettably. I used to stand tall. Now I'm on my knees, unraveling, hoping you will see that I'm worthy for you to stay with me. Tears, my love, my hands, my soul, my everything. Ooh, the light of my life. How can you say to me that you don't wanna be? Chase love regrettably. I used to stand tall. Now I'm on my knees, unraveling, open. You will see that I'm worthy for you to stay with me. I used to
everything.
My everything.